This is Only a Game. I'm Karen Given.
Olympic victory ceremony, 200 meters, men.
They came out of the chute to walk out to the victory stand. I could see them.
On October 16, 1968, Wyomi Atias and about 200 other athletes crammed into the stands at the Olympic Stadium in Mexico City to watch Americans Tommy Smith and John Carlos accept their medals.
And as they start walking, I'm looking down. I'm like, oh, they don't have their shoes on. What are they doing?
Everyone was expecting something. Smith and Carlos had been heavily involved with a group calling for a black boycott of the Games to protest racial inequality. But they decided to make their stand in a different way.
And they put up their fists and it was like, my. The stadium got so quiet. I mean, just absolute silence. And then the next thing, you could start hearing people mumbling, talking. Then you start to hear voices get louder, whistling, and you hear boos and the cheers. And I kept thinking, I'm really afraid for them. And then I kept thinking, I'm afraid for my life here.
50 years later, everyone knows the story of Tommy Smith and John Carlos. But Wyomi Atias made a stand at those Olympics, too, and far fewer people know her story. Wyomi Atias grew up in the Jim Crow era in a small town called Griffin, Georgia. Her father was a tenant farmer, all of her neighbors were white, and everyone got along pretty well. Wyomi called it her safe haven. She remembers this one time when a new family moved into the neighborhood. One of the boys called Wyomi and her brothers the N-word, but the Atias kids knew how to deal with that.
We would draw a line in the sand or in the dirt and say, okay, if you step across and call us names, that's a problem right there.
The boy stepped across the line and used that word again.
And my brother said, well, you know what? I'm going to let my sister take care of it. I took care of him and kind of beat him up a little bit. And from that day on, we really had no problems.
And this is how it would go. Every so often, a new family would move in, Wyomi would fight, and life would go on, safe haven restored. Her father taught her early not to shy away from conflict.
He just wanted us to make sure we were strong people. Anything we wanted to do, we need to believe in it, fight for it. Always told us, hey, look, it's not always going to be this way. Things are going to change, and I may not see it in my lifetime, but you will.
Things did change, but not in the way Wyomia's father had hoped. One night, when Wyomi was 14, she was at church with her family. Four white men walked in.
It's like, what in the world? What could they want? And they were looking for my dad in a church.
The men were Wyomi's neighbors. They'd come to tell her family that their house was on fire. And just like that, Wyomi lost her safe haven. Her father fell into a deep depression. He never recovered.
Right after that, my father passed away, and that was really devastating to me. I mean, my dad was my rock, and I just, you know, I became a very quiet person, not really talking very much.
Yeah, I have a hard time picturing that.
Well, you know, it's kind of like people ask me these days, do you still run? And I say, I run my mouth now. So.
Wyomi was 15 and still in what she likes to call her quiet phase when she met Ed Temple, the women's track coach at Tennessee State. He invited her to come to Nashville for the summer to train with other high school runners. The camp was free, but Wyomi couldn't afford to get there. Her high school took up a collection and gave her an envelope filled with $23.
And when I get to the train station, not the airport, when I get off in Nashville, Tennessee, Mr. Temple is there, and I was happy about that because I didn't know what I was going to do otherwise. He says, this is Rudolph. I said, okay, hi. I'm like, Rudolph, who is this person?
Later, when she got to the dorms and heard some of the other girls talking, Wyomi figured it out.
Wilma Rudolph starts a saga of individual glory.
She won three gold medals in the Olympics in Rome, and that's who she was, and she was quite famous.
A few years later, Wyomia enrolled at Tennessee State, where Ed Temple was the track coach, and the women on the team were called the Tiger Bells.
When I met the Tiger Bells, they were women that were doing things in life. These women had gone to Europe, they had gone to England, they had gone to Germany, they had gone to Russia. I'd never heard of such.
Over more than four decades coaching the Tiger Bells, Mr. Temple sent 40 women to the Olympics. His athletes won 23 medals. And that's just what Wyomia Tyus wanted to do.
In 1964, I was 19.
Mr. Temple took Wyomia and the Tiger Bells to the Olympic trials. The top three sprinters would go to Tokyo. Wyomia came in third.
And he was like, don't worry about it. We're not looking for great things for you. We just think 68 gonna be your year.
But once she got to Tokyo, Wyomia started thinking she might have a shot in 64 after all. She won her first heat. In her second, she set a new Olympic record. She entered the finals undefeated.
Wyomia Tyus of the U.S. set an Olympic mark in the semifinals.
I said in my head, I could win a gold medal. And then I started thinking, why am I thinking like this? I'm going to get the big head. I don't want that.
She runs her rivals into the ground to reach the tape in 11 and 4/10 seconds.
Edith McGuire, who's my best friend, after the race, she runs up to me, Tyus, you won. I said, I did? She said, yeah. I said, what did you get? And she said, I got second.
Yes, the American Eagle flies high in Tokyo.
Wyomia says she and Edith were treated with respect by the Japanese. But when they returned home, they were reminded of the way things were. Blacks had to sit in the back of the bus, drink from a different water fountain. They didn't have equal opportunities, and they didn't receive a hero's welcome after winning gold and silver at the Olympics.
Edith and I are both from Georgia. She's from Atlanta, Georgia. They only gave us the parade in the black neighborhood. They didn't give us a parade throughout Atlanta. You're talking about the 60s, and that was not much they were doing for people of color.
Wyomia and Edith weren't the only black athletes who noticed they'd been treated better abroad than at home. As the 1968 games approached, Wyomia started hearing about calls for black athletes to boycott the Olympics in Mexico City.
I say I heard about it. It's not like a call and we talked about it on the phone. We were just not contacted as women. They just felt like, they'll go along with whatever we say.
Wyomia doesn't fault anyone for not asking for her opinion on the boycott, but she does wonder why they assumed she'd go along. How can you speak for a group of people, she asks. Eventually, most athletes decided they had more to lose by staying at home than they did by competing in Mexico City. So they went, and it was there that the organizers of the movement, now called the Olympic Project for Human Rights, finally held a meeting and invited everyone, including the women.
We were trying to talk about what could we do as a group. And nobody could come up with one thing. So we just left it as, whatever you would like to do will be okay. And then when Tommy and Carlos did what they did on the victory stand, it was so powerful. It was nothing for anybody else to do.
Tommy Smith and John Carlos, the Olympic 200 meters gold and bronze medalists, had been suspended by the United States Olympic Committee and given 48 hours to leave Mexico.
By the time Tommy Smith and John Carlos raised their fists, Wyomia Tyus had already made Olympic history by becoming the first person to repeat as 100-meter champion. In the final, instead of wearing her uniform shorts, white with red and blue trim, she'd worn black shorts in support of the Olympic Project for Human Rights. No one had noticed her quiet protest. But Wyomia had one more race to run, the 4x100-meter relay.
After the relay, we went into the press room, and reporters were just all over us about what Tommy and Carlos had done, and what do you think about this?
In 1968, Wyomia was just starting to come out of her quiet phase. She still hadn't said more than a word or two at a time to reporters.
Well, they asked me a question, yes, no, I don't know, maybe so.
But this time, when reporters asked what she thought, Wyomia had something to say. What is there to think, she said. They made a statement. We all know that we're fighting for human rights. That's what they stood for on the victory stand. Human rights for everyone, everywhere. And to support that and to support them, I'm dedicating my medal to them. I believe in what they did.
I found my voice. You know, there's certain things in life that makes you change. And for me, it makes me become a better person, made me become the person I am.
But while Wyomia had changed, life back home still had not. Nobody was interested in putting a black woman on a pedestal, not even the first ever back-to-back gold medalist in the 100 meters.
Mr. Temple had prepared us, and he would always tell us all the time, you know, you could go to the Olympic Games, you could win 10 gold medals, but you come back here, they don't really care. They give you a parade and a key that doesn't work.
Wyomia kept fighting. She moved to California, helped establish the Women's Sports Foundation, and continued to champion for equal rights. And while she says she sometimes looks around and wonders if she's back in 1968, she has one lasting reminder that not everything is the same as it was 50 years ago. In 1999, Wyomia was asked to come back to her hometown of Griffin, Georgia, for the opening of the Wyomia Tyus Olympic Park. She thought they'd put it in the black neighborhood. She thought it would be small. But when she arrived, she discovered that her park was huge, 168 acres with soccer fields and baseball fields, hiking trails, and a pond you can fish in. The town even put together a torch ceremony, with Wyomia running the last lap.
One of the officials in Griffin came up to me and he just said, Wyomie, we hope this makes up for the things what we didn't do.
Did it make up for what they didn't do before?
I didn't look at it as a makeup. I looked at it more that the people in the town has grown. It takes time. I know we would like to see things move a lot quicker. I just keep thinking about my dad saying, you know, it's not always going to be this way. People are going to change. Here it is 50 years later and a lot more people are aware of what's going on. A lot more people are standing up and speaking out. In order for this to be a better world to live in, that's what we have to do.
Mr. Temple died 2 years ago. That's when Wyomia Tyus decided to write a book to tell people about the good work he'd done. It's called Tiger Bell, The Wyomia Tyus Story.